The Man in Line with Beth Espy.
Faster, my good afternoon. Lovely to have your company this lunchtime. It is The Man in Line, and we would love to talk to you today about anything at all that's on your mind. It does feel like there's quite a lot going on at the moment, doesn't it? Vehicle duty rises, unpopular but necessary, says the minister. We've just seen the Bank of England has raised interest rates to 4.25%. Reduced post collections, potential for some form of legal action after the Laxey landslip, and a decision expected in May about a £40 million housing development in Ramsey. Or perhaps there's something else altogether that you would like to talk about. 66 13 68 is the number, and Howard is waiting to take your call. You can also text 166 177 or email studio at manxradio.com. But I just want to start by answering a question that was asked at the start of the week, and it was about smart meters. The question was, are smart meters compulsory to people who have heart monitors, as the electromagnetic waves interfere with the monitors, so say doctors and professors? Well, I contacted Manx Utilities and they gave me the following statement. Manx Utilities has commenced the rollout of smart meters, which will see all domestic and commercial electricity meters replaced over the next 4 years. Ultimately, everyone with an electricity account will need to have a smart-enabled device installed because the supply chain for the old devices will cease. To date, Manx Utilities has installed over 6,500 smart meters as part of the replacement of the legacy key metering system, with positive feedback received from customers who now have access to real-time energy consumption data via the Smarter Living app and the capability to top up their electricity account anywhere in the world. Electrical devices and processes generate electromagnetic fields. The varied use of modern technology makes them unavoidable in our working life, everyday life, and in medicine. Electromagnetic fields, says the MUA, can affect the functioning of active cardiac devices, which consists of sensing the heart rhythm and the associated heart stimulation. In general, though, the electromagnetic fields associated with smart meters are not classified as a risk to heart monitors and present no greater risk than devices already used within the home or business premises. And the MUA says it can confirm that all electricity meters have met international standards for electromagnetic compatibility. But if you do have any concerns, then you can contact the Smarter Living team. The number is 0808 1624 115. That's 0808 1624 115. Or you can email smarterliving@manxutilities.im. So I hope that answers that question that was asked at the start of the week. We can go straight to the lines, though, now and join Julian. Good afternoon, Julian. How are you doing?
Hi, Beth. A nice day out there. It's starting to feel a bit spring-like, isn't it?
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. Just on that point about the smart meters, the other point I think people need to ask is details about demand side response. If you're trying to charge your car and they haven't put a new power station in, how much control will they have over certain circuits in your house? They're not allowed to cut you off, but they will be able to slow you down or even stop you, which is, I think, some of the policy makers were that you, if you wanted to charge your car, you might have to be waiting until midnight before that circuit would kick in. So demand side response might be an interesting question for the MUA, just to see how much control they have over some of your circuits in your house with things like that.
All right, Julian, good point there.
Yeah, I listened with interest yesterday to Bonzo's recommendation that I read the AR6 policymakers climate summary. I have already read it, but he did give me an idea to look deeper into the credentials of the authors who are disseminating the opinions that set these net zero policies for the world. It's a long list, but I've got a short list here of some of the core authors. For example, you've got Professor Hans Otto Portner, who is a physiologist, Helen Adams, an environmental social scientist, Elam Ali, aquatic environmental science, fish faculty, Richard Betts, chartered accountant, Rachel Besner-Kerr, sociology and international development, Galeardo Cisse, a cardiovascular specialist, Andrew Constable, systems ecologist and modeller, David Dodman, Institute for Housing and Urban Development Studies. I could go on for half an hour with this list because, you know, they don't do a lot of them. But what seems to be apparent is that none of these authors are classical scientists in core subjects like physics and related to climate and how it works, but rather seem to be focused on human-caused impact, which seems to be the wrong way around. It's like the cart before the horse. You're trying to fix a problem that hasn't been properly discussed with credentialed scientists, but it all seems to be based on predictive models.
I'm just going to stop you there, Julian, because I wonder how accurate it is to say that these problems haven't been confirmed by proper scientists, if you want to put it like that. And I think if you look at what scientists say, and we see the changes that are happening and the escalation of those changes, they are happening a lot more quickly. I just wonder whether it's fair to say nothing will change your mind on this. And if you talk about confirmation bias, you are going to read into whatever report you read what you want to see, surely.
Well, no, I mean, I'm pretty open-minded about these things. But this is what I was going to come to. I would really appreciate Bonzo coming on and giving a peer-reviewed study from an accredited scientist related to climate, you know, in terms of atmospheric chemistries, paleoclimatology, anything like that, showing a direct cause by humans, rather than, for example, recently it's been reported that Greta Thunberg back in 2018 said the world would end in 2023, which is this year, and that tweet was quietly deleted last week. So it appears to be more scaremongering. Now, my problem with this is it affects people's mental health. You've got this constant barrage of the world's going to end any minute. And especially amongst well-meaning but perhaps impressionable young people. I don't know what you think about that, Beth, but, you know, we're getting all this information. 97% of scientists agree. But when you look at the list of the scientists who are the core authors of a 3,068-page document, which is basically being used to assail us with, we're all going to, you know,
well, I think that Julian, I would
happen to us in 10 years based on a weather forecast where they said it was going to rain on the island all day yesterday, and it was lovely in blue skies. You know what I mean? I would like to see some peer-reviewed studies exactly on this, rather than getting information from people who are maybe an oceanographer, but they're dealing in, you know, the well-being of fish, or they're doing with urban house development or migration from Peru. You know,
Julian, people might ask where you get your information from, though, I suppose, and how peer-reviewed that is, maybe.
Well, say, for example, you look at the World Climate Declaration, which is at clintel.org. You look at William Happer, for example. He's the senior atmospheric scientist at Princeton. He's in his late 70s and has been doing this for over 50 years and has specialised in things like how CO2 molecules interact in the atmosphere, upper and lower and everything else. You look at Roy Spencer, who runs the aquasatellite system that looks at temperatures all through the Earth, on every single inch of the Earth, saying that the world has cooled by 0.02% since the 70s. So I'm looking at people who are actually looking down at the satellites, or people that have been studying this for years that are being censored. And I'm just wondering why there isn't that discussion with the scientists who have the core subjects, you know, the big three, you know, people in physics, chemistry. We don't seem to see that in this list that I'm looking at, which is the one that's telling us what to do.
All right, Julian, I think we could probably have a longer discussion about this, but as ever, really appreciate you taking the time to call this afternoon. Let's go to line two now and join Howard. Good afternoon, Howard.
Hi, Beth. I was just talking to Howard there, but I wasn't going to come on here, but it seems to be reasonably quiet. It could be of interest to all gas consumers on the island, mains gas or otherwise. They notified that the price would be dropping on March the 1st. So I read my meter late at night, and then I took a photograph of it as well. And the next day, on March the 1st, I tried to phone the company and couldn't get through. And in the end, I thought, well, I'll try it. And I went on their website, first time I ever used it, put in all the details, and that was on March the 1st. I can tell you even what time it was. Yesterday, the 22nd of March, I was still waiting for my bill. So I thought, well, what's happened? So I rang up, and I did eventually get through to a call centre. And that particular person was less than interested. And even when I asked, I gave him my customer number, and even when I asked, have you got the right person, she said, what's your email address? Well, that means nothing. It could be anything. So it wasn't my address, anything like that for the house. But in the end, she was, as I say, less than interested. She said, well, I'll put it back in again now. I'll resubmit it. And I said, how long is that going to take? Oh, about another 2, maybe 3 weeks. So it would have been 5 to 6 weeks from submitting a meter reading to getting a bill. That's not saying it's going to be correct when it gets here. So, and then her words were, enjoy the rest of your day, click, and that was me gone. So after lunch, I thought, I'll go down to the gas company itself. Walked into the main building down on the quayside. There was a young lad and a lady in there, and the old world charm, the courtesy and service was there. Full stop. It was all pleasant. Everything was sorted. And within 10 minutes, I had a paper bill up to the 1st of March. And I said, well, while I'm here, I might as well pay it. And so I paid that then, not waiting for it to go out by direct debit, because Lord knows what mess that would have been. So that company was better off yesterday by over £200. And if they're talking about cash flows and everything, why are they making it so hard for you to pay your bills or even get a bill? So the system is failing in so much that the work on that side of it is all put off island. But one of the nasty parts about it is I noticed on the wall, down in the thing, the gas company, that they're closing the front desk at 2:30 from the 3rd of April. So that means you won't be able to go down there 2 o'clock, 2:30, and check on anything that you need to check. But just what company in this world does not want you to give it money? And that's what it amounts to. They don't seem to be particularly bothered. They were dragging their heels, and this could affect an awful lot of people who did what the gas company are asking them to do, is put in a meter reading. And it just was not happening. So as I say, it could have been anything up to 5 to 6 weeks before I got a bill.
Okay, but Howard, that's interesting. Yep.
Yesterday, as I say, I went down to the company. The lady and the young man in there, they sat down, they gave me a paper bill, and that was it. All within 10 minutes, I was walking back out of the office.
Well, it's nice to hear that face-to-face encounter was a positive one yesterday, and just goes to show sometimes it's really good to talk to people in that position, isn't it? Interesting point, Howard. Let me pass that on and see if we can get any answer from the company on it.
Yeah, because there must be an awful lot of people out there that did exactly the same as me, submitted a bill prior to the price dropping. But what crossed my mind, and I could be totally wrong on it, they're going to get estimated bills which could exceed the time where the price dropped. They could be still be paying the higher rate. It's about 3 pence per unit. It's not a lot, but it's there. And that 3 pence per unit could be added onto their bills after the 1st of March.
All right, Howard.
There's different ways of looking at it, but I have to give credit where credit's due. The lady and the young lad behind the counter at the gas company premises were excellent.
Lovely. Great to hear that. Thank you so much, Howard. Lovely to talk to you as ever.
Take care.
Take care then. We have just had a call in from Chris Williams, who's just on his way back out west, and he said there has been a one vehicle RTC by the quarry on the road just outside Peel. We understand the police are in attendance there, but there's no ambulance or anything there yet. So if you can avoid that area, you might be well advised to do so, if at all possible. We keep you updated on what's going on there. Howard Kane, lots of comments in this afternoon already.
As always, yes, plenty of comments. A few people following Julian's comments, and also, obviously, there's always an ongoing, shall we say, debate between Julian and Bonzo, possibly on either side of the fence, but all with lots of facts and figures to quote, which some people like, some people get very frustrated with, and think we could be talking Google warriors here, which is, I think, the problem to a large degree, isn't it? When it comes to climate change, these massive issues, there's acres of information out there. You could spend weeks reading the stuff online or whatever, and I'm sure lots of people do. How you prove that independently, and as you suggested with Julian there, you can interpret those figures, I suppose, as you want, and you can either believe them or not believe them. On a more serious matter, he says, tongue-in-cheek, Chipgate.
Oh, it's continuing, is it?
It is continuing, okay. One way or another. We have had a little bit more on Chipgate, which is always nice to balance these slightly larger issues in life, like the world and climate change and chips. It's what the Man in Line's all about. Hi, guys. The most amazing thing is the difference in price in chips and the quality and quantity of the said chips. I would prefer, as it's called, to get out of Douglas to get my chips nowadays. No more Douglas chips for me, says Mr. Perfect.
My goodness me. Keep us updated on your lunch antics between now and 1 p.m. 66 13 68, if you'd like to tell us about that or anything else on air. We'd love to talk to you. 12:22 now.
The Man in Line with Beth Espy.
It is 12:25. So lovely to have your company this lunchtime. 66 13 68 is the number to give us a call if you'd like to talk about anything at all on air. Or you can text 166 177 or email studio@manxradio.com. And if you've got it in your contacts for WhatsApp, that's a really easy way to contact us as well. Let's go through some of the texts and emails that we've had so far then. Texter ending 311 says, I understand from listening to Timwald on Tuesday that children involved in the RSE advisory curriculum have not been interviewed. Minister Edge indicated, and I'm happy to be corrected, that interviewing children would be subject to procedures including gaining parental consent. Let me check on that one for you to make absolutely clear before I say anything else on that. This Sulby River development said, Fran, is it an offshoot of Dandara Homes? Does anyone know about the identity of this company? Again, that's something we can find out more information on. Text ending 718 says, can Julian and Bonzo get a room? I'm bored of listening to them every day. Bring back Marge. Marge. You remember Marge, don't you, Howard? Hey?
Oh, well, yes, Marge wasn't so much climate change as animal rights normally, but yes, Marge and Dorothy, two stalwarts of the Man in Line of yore. Those of you of a certain age will remember them well.
Certainly will. Give Julian his own show, says text ending 333. And we can all then switch off. Ironic that Julian is talking about scaremongering when he's been doing this over the past 2 years about a certain vaccination, says Andrew. Somebody else believing that Julian misrepresenting again. Greta's tweet did not say the world would end in 2023. The context was about our reliance on fossil fuels. Steve says daily dose of misinformation from Julian, who talks about agendas but 100% has a definite climate change denial agenda. The list of scientists he read out are vastly more than someone who spends days on Google reinforcing his own confirmation bias. But then Ian has messaged to say, have you noticed nobody is going on about the ozone layer or our coral reefs? Fact, the ozone layer is in a better state now than it was 15 years ago. Fact, the Great Barrier Reef is in a better state now than 10 years ago. 15% of the Middle East is greener now than 15 years ago, i.e. more trees and not bushes. Here's a lot of mass environmental scaremongering going on. Noel's been in touch to say the very old oak tree has gone missing overnight from the civil defence building on Woodburn Road. I have to look into that one, actually, Noel. I haven't noticed anything about that. Is that one you've spotted, H?
I haven't been past there. I noticed that coming in before, and clearly there is a lot of tree work going on around the island at the moment. Not so much oak, I think, but certainly things like the ash dieback, which I think we were talking about the other day. A lot of work going on there to remove some of those dead and diseased trees. But I haven't noticed the oak.
Let us find out about that one. What would some people do without Google? It must have been a very boring life for them previously. If I'd had so much spare time, I certainly wouldn't be playing on a phone or screen, says Ian. Ron believes that Manx Gas is allowing the problems so that the government will step in and buy it. Brian suggests that Julian needs to take a long look at the UN climate report, which was published this week. G says in 2018, a Harvard professor said the polar ice caps would be gone by 2023. Perhaps some scepticism about climate change would be less if experts explain themselves when they were wrong. Morris says, go to Port Air in Chippy, super value that you can't fault in any way.
Yeah, Port Erin is up there in Morris's views. Obviously, other towns and villages are available for your chips. You just have to experiment.
Happy birthday, Evan Gelling. 18 today. Happy birthday, Evan. You will go into the list and you could win a ShopRite voucher when Mark does that draw at the beginning of the month.
Absolutely. Happy birthday to you. Just looking on WhatsApp, and Ray says, Julian is always very well informed. Indeed he is. But he must accept, says Ray, climate change is happening and we must act in any way we can to slow it down. It's not scaremongering. It's our future and we must protect it for our children. So please, Julian, help, not doubt. In fact, that's from Big John, I think. That was Ray. Big John, that was from. Okay.
Mark has been interested to say, it's not just the excellent chips, it's a service. They served our chippy teas all through lockdown. I wonder what you're talking about. And if in the future we're living in a nuclear wasteland, oh, the terrace chippy will still be open. I have had a smart meter now for 8 months, says this texter. As an account customer, it makes no difference to how I use electricity. I believe that only top-up customers can access data use. It's only a benefit to the MUA and to enable them to save money. I cannot argue with that at all, says texter ending in 796. Maybe Mr. Perfect should go to the chippy in Onken at the side of the two pubs, as you get what is like a large chips for the price of a normal chips in Douglas. The ozone layer is repairing due to the action that was taken in the 1980s, says texter, ending in 653. It's interesting, actually, because that's one of the first things I remember about being around school and being talked to about the ozone layer and the importance of not using CFCs. It's funny how things like that stick in your mind. Let's go to the lines and join Betty. Good afternoon, Betty.
Hi, Beth. Just a very quick word. I just want to agree with what Howard said about the gas. It's hopeless, really, here now. It was so good before when you could speak to somebody who was actually on Ireland, and they need to bring that back, really. That was one thing. And the other thing I wanted to say, Beth, was I think it's so nice to have you and Howard talking to each other as well as talking to the rest of us. I think it goes well.
Oh, thank you, Beth. That's really lovely. Thank you.
Okay, that's all I have to say.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you.
And you take care.
You too. Take care, Betty. Thank you very much indeed. Loads more Chipgate comments, Howard. It seems we've ignited something here.
Well, you know what? Sort of, in theory, chips, cheese and gravy, as we know, is the national dish of the Isle of Man. Now, yep. I might take issue with that. I don't know. Others might, but you can take your pick on that one. But without a doubt, it is always a popular topic. It's amazing how many people do go for chips, it would seem, for their lunchtime snackette, one way or another. And I think it's always the case, isn't it? If you look around, people normally, when I was a kid, Hope Street Chippy, I can say that without advertising because it's not there anymore now. Hope Street Chippy used to be the place to go for the best chips on the island. Everyone knew that. That is now gone and people have their own favourites, I guess, but it seems to a degree to be part quality and part quantity, and then it's a case of, you know, quality versus quantity. Does more mean better? Don't know.
Not sure. 12:32 here on The Man in Line. This is a lovely story. I'm going to tell you this, actually. This has come from Matty, one of our engineers, who says he was working for Manx Independent Newspapers in the early 1990s and remembers a caller chatting to David Collister, and he was talking about cows on the promenade. David suggested it would be a long way for a cow to travel to get to the promenade. The caller replied, she's putting tickets on all the cars before getting cut off. Isn't that awful? Maybe that one is lurking in the archive room somewhere. That was not nice. Not nice at all. 166177 if you would like to text us, or you can email studio@manxradio.com, or better still, 66 1368 is the number to call if you'd like to go live on air.
The Man in Line with Beth Espy. This is the Isle of Man talking. The Man in Line.
just want to make sure you know exactly what you're listening to. It is The Man in Line on Manx Radio. It is 12:35. Now, as we've been hearing in the news today, it's hoped planners will decide whether a £40 million housing development in Ramsey can go ahead in May. Sulby Riverside Limited wants to build a mixed development of 207 new homes, a pub, children's play park and commercial premises near the town centre. Now, this project has actually been in the pipeline since 2021, but still needs to go before the planning committee. We had a question about the company behind this, Sulby Riverside Limited, a little bit earlier in the programme. I'm delighted that the project manager, Josh Church, is now on the line. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So you wanted to clarify a few points.
Yes, yeah, I believe it's potentially being a bit confused. There might be a Dandara offshoot project or something on the back of Dandara.
That was the question, yeah.
Yes, we're not linked to Dandara at all.
Okay.
And the other thing, just to clarify, is it says there's a May decision date, and I had a discussion yesterday. I think it was aired today, and it was based that May hasn't been decided as the decision date, but it is one of the likelier times that it will be, because we were looking at March, then we were looking at April, and then May is the next committee that we think that might be the right timing, but it may even push to June, depending on how the planning office get on.
Okay, great to have those points qualified there. Thank you.
Yeah, in terms, I don't want to feel like we're putting the planners under pressure, because they're already under a huge amount of pressure, really.
And in terms of the response generally, I mean, have you got a feeling for what the general sentiment to this development is in the town, Joshua?
We feel it's positive, and we have really we have spent a good deal of funding making sure that various consultees are happy, and we feel we've succeeded in most cases on that basis. So that was, and we also did a public consultation which came back very positively. That was done quite a while ago now, so it has been received quite well, and it would make sense because it's landed in the centre of town. It's not being used. It means we're not going into the green belt. We've ticked off all the boxes that we need to from a planning point of view, as best we can. So we're quite positive, really.
And just very briefly, in terms of the background to Sulby Riverside Limited, who are you? Where have you come from?
So my dad is an Isle of Man resident, and he's a property investor, and he's put together a syndicate of team, and then we've just run it that way, really. We put together a team of professionals from, a government advising flood experts, architects called Backer from the UK, who advise international governments and international companies on full schemes. So we put a full scheme together, and we have a very small syndicate of investors, a couple who would rather remain confidential, I'm sure. But yeah, it's just private business investors, really.
And just finally, a question just popped up from a listener, actually, with regard to the plans to build a pub. And we know that actually that industry is struggling quite a bit at the moment. Do we need another pub, would you say?
It all depends on how it's done. We actually have pub investments across in the UK, and obviously pubs are closing, and we've actually saved and rescued 13 pubs because it's when you reinvest in them and make sure that people want to be in them. It's like any other business. If they're not nice and they're not ran well, people don't want to be in them. So it's all about making them nicer. And also that business, it can come across as a pub, and it sort of is, but it's meant to be more community-based and sort of an event centre that people can use. So it's not really your traditional boozer-type pub. It's more of a centre that would give good access to the park along the riverside and just sort of add the food and beverage where it's needed in that location.
Brilliant. Josh, really appreciate you taking the time to call us and clarifying those points. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Josh Church, who is the project manager for Sulby Riverside Limited. So I hope that answers the question that was asked towards the beginning of the programme, and also clarifies the fact that it might be decided in May. That might be pushed back to June because, as Josh says, he understands just how much pressure the planning department is in at the moment. Howard.
Yes, I was just talking to a gentleman there, and we'll get on to the tech boys here, saying he was trying to listen on Alexa and he was having some sort of problems. It was cutting out after a while, so I hope that's not affecting anyone else, and I'll check with our technical team here to see if there is a problem on that. Also, I see just another thought coming in saying, hey, hi, Beth and H. This is Mr. Thomas again, saying we'll have to pay even more vehicle tax, or road tax, I think it is. On the website, it says a minimum of £65. But a motorcycle. What's he say there? Is this correct, says John? I don't know. Have you actually heard on that one?
No, we need to get a breakdown of the different fees, actually. And we did hear about this on Breakfast this morning, and the Infrastructure Minister, Chris Thomas, accepted that this is an unpopular move, which was agreed by Tim Ward this week, although it is necessary to make people pay more from April. So motorists will see a 10% increase across most categories, and a minimum charge is also being introduced, which will apply to electric vehicles, as we've been talking about. Disabled vehicles, though, I understand no charge there still.
I think that is the case, to the best of my knowledge. A quick update on Chipgate.
Okay, go on.
Billy says, in my view, the best fish and chips in Douglas that you can get from Bathurst Street. You have to wait for them to be specially cooked for you, but I suppose they're all the better for the anticipation. And one other thought. I beg your pardon, says this texter. I was always said to believe the national dish of the Isle of Man was spuds and herring.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, this is a debate and a half, isn't it? I am a fan, I have to say, of chips, cheese and gravy. I can only take a small portion. It's quite staunchy.
I've always
after
heard
a
that.
While. Thank
the,
you.
The, have you ever actually had spud and herring?
I've had fish and potatoes.
Does that count?
I don't know. Does it count?
Well, it depends whether it was herring, doesn't it? I mean, if it's mackerel,
suppose, yeah.
It's clearly not.
Yeah, OK. Forget about your Douglas chippies. The lunchtime special at the Chinese next to the Horse and Plough. Other Chinese's are available. That's amazing, apparently.
Well, you see, it is a without a doubt, it seems there are different sizes out there. So what you get for your money is different. After that, I suppose, it's also down to this whole quality thing, isn't it? How you like your chips, whether you like them really small, whether you like them fat, how hot they are. I think most people want their chips to be hot, don't they? So I suppose there's
an
argument.
You don't want cold chips,
there's
do you?
An argument for, you know, having them cooked to order, but it's very difficult if you've got a big queue just to do, you know, one batch at a time. So you pays your money.
You certainly do. Fred has got a quick question. What is happening with the Ramsey Marina, as it seems to have gone very quiet? Fred, I'm making a note of that one. That is a good point. Something we haven't heard about in recent times. There is another message. Peter Crouch and Abby Clant. Oops, I hope I haven't given away a competition answer there.
What have you done?
No, nothing.
Say nothing.
It's okay.
Ignore
it's
that.
Right.
Ignore whatever okay. Beth said. I'll just give you, you know, the amber weather warning for the coastal overtopping. Siobhan's just been in to tell me that Shaw Road in Laxey is closed because of this amber warning we've had for the last day or two about this coastal overtopping and high tides. So Shaw Road, Laxey's closed. Also, West Quay in Ramsey closed from Bowring Road to Market Square. And this is indeed due to what was being warned about all morning, inner harbour overtopping.
OK, let's hear from the DOI Minister, Chris Thomas, now about those road tax rises or vehicle duty rises. As we have been hearing, motorists will see a 10% increase across most categories. DOI Minister Chris Thomas has been talking to Phil Gawne.
All users, except for those like disabled people and people who drive motorcycles and veteran vehicle owners, will pay a minimum of £65 for their vehicle duty. That was a precedent that was set today. I've now launched a one-year engagement process, and I would hope that the 2024 order, which will also come in 1st of April next year, I've now aligned it again to the financial year. I hope that by that stage we have banded approaches based on emissions or weight or something that comes out of the engagement, very similar to all the proposals that have been made over the last 10 or 15 years, because there are, you know, and perhaps taking more of fuel duty into account and perhaps doing something imaginative with MUA about electric vehicles that are being charged at home on hugely discounted tariffs that are only available for electric vehicle users. We've got to get inside people's heads to end up with a consensus about what's fair, because ultimately we need to maintain roads. There are all sorts of users. They've got to pay a proportion. I gave the figure of £200 or a bit more that every user of the highways has got to pay to have enough revenue for us to maintain the roads and improve them where necessary and bring them back up to the standard we want, because there's lots of roads that are subcondition. It's difficult. It's hard to get through vehicle duties, as proved by the fact that nobody's managed it since 2020. And thank you very much to my Tim Ward colleagues for voting for it.
What do you think would be the fairest solution to all this?
So what I've challenged the officers to do is to summarise summarise all the proposals they've made to council ministers, to the public, to Tim Wood over the years into one document, which will be the basis of engagement. So we'll be writing all that down for you and giving people choices. We're not going to have a tick box consultation because that's a bit pointless. We're going to actually call for evidence about how we should be doing it and ask detailed submissions based on us presenting all of the alternatives. There were 10,000 people who lose out from today's duty. The electric vehicles is quite a small number compared to the 10,000 people who have smaller vehicles or low emission vehicles who were paying lower than £65, that have had their duty increased to £65, and the proportionate increase would depend on how much lower than £65 you were applying previously. Thank you for them for beginning to share the load, but as I said, you're still being subsidised by the people who pay more than the £200 plus, which is the average vehicle duty that's paid.
That is the DOI Minister, Chris Thomas, who is talking to our political correspondent, Phil Gorn, there about the increases to vehicle tax. They were voted for in Tynwald this week. Not everyone voted for them. It wasn't unanimous by any stretch of the imagination. There will be more from Chris Thomas on one of Phil's programmes, either on Sunday or Monday. I'm going to be honest, I can't remember which one it is. Apparently, Castletown Promenade is very flooded at the moment. So just be aware if you are around that area. Hopefully, there are a lot of warnings about needing to prepare properties in the areas that would most likely be affected by this inner harbour flooding. So hopefully you've got some defences in place. Howard?
Yep, a bit more on Chipgate. Not that I'm saying I'm the Chipgate king on this, but I do like it when people get enthused about these sort of things. John says he's a man of the West, not the North or the South, which we heard is very good. Best chips, says John, are from Peel Chippy. I go every Friday. Great chips and great service. I'm glad to hear that. Well done. And something more, statistical from G. Apparently, 10 standard-sized chips equate to around 100 grams in weight. This is serious scientific research on the chip front. A 2-kilogram bag of spuds costs around £2.50. So, says G, 4 chips for 10 pence.
OK, keep the chip thoughts coming in. There is a message from Ian who says, I don't think anyone would mind paying more vehicle duty as long as the DOI and government stopped lying to us and actually use it on road repairs. So I think, we've had this explained before, haven't we, that basically, I suppose, everything goes into one pot and then it's divided up between the departments. So you're not actually having all of that money going towards road repairs necessarily. But is that perhaps something that you would like to see happen? How much more can the Manx public take us? Fred, we are being taxed to the hilt on everything, but the wages are not equivalent to the taxation rises we are suffering. These people need to wise up and smell the coffee. Every user pays for the roads, Mr. Thomas? Then tax the menace of Lycra cyclists. Ooh, that's a good one to get us going at nearly 10 to 1, isn't it? There is another message about a lot of standing water as you go into the Tesco's area at the moment. It looks like a blocked drain. So again, just be aware if you're in that area. It's obviously is coinciding with the high tide. We've got that amber weather warning in place until 2 p.m. Just looking out of the window here at Douglas Promenade. We know the central and northern end of Douglas Promenade as well was going to be a little bit affected by this. So just do take care if you are around and about. What about people who do very low mileage? Asks Ed. Let's go to the lines though and join Terry on line one. Good afternoon, Terry.
Hello, Beth. This Sorby project, this river.
Yes.
Well, I used to live down Gardens Lane many years ago. In 1972-73, members commissioners were doing Bersham Avenue. So I was a lorry driver, my own lorry.
Yeah.
We used to take all the soil down to the tip, which is down Gardens Lane. High spring tides, the water came in the cab. It was 2 to 3 feet deep. So what are they doing about that?
Okay. I imagine, Terry, well, hopefully, obviously, as we know, this has to still go through the planning process and committee. I mean, hopefully that'd be something picked up at that point, surely.
It should be. This has been going on for a long time it has. Quite a few years ago, I was asked the same thing, told them, we didn't know that. And the water was at least 3 foot deep as it came into the tip. It was.
Okay.
And spring tides.
Right. Yeah, the spring tides.
So they're going to stop the water doing that.
Yeah, it's a good
point.
We've
not been gardeners late for a few years.
Okay.
So I'll leave it to them. See how they get on with that.
All right, Terry. Thank you for raising that one. Appreciate it.
Okay, darling, bye.
All right, take care. That was Terry there just talking about the flooding where they are thinking of building. Victoria wants to know, what exactly are the objections to geothermal energy? And I understand that we have more chip comments.
Well, you know, you can't keep a good chip down, as they say. Hi, Beth and Howard, says Bri. The sign of a good chip is whether it tastes as good when it's cold as when it's hot. This is pretty controversial. Who's ever heard of eating cold chips?
They go soggy, don't they?
It depends on the cooking oil or lard, whether you're cooking them in oil, that is, or lard or beef dripping.
Ooh, beef dripping.
Beef dripping chips.
Aren't you
I think
supposed
that's the
to
best.
Double do them?
Double fried, yeah, or treble fried, I think, in order to get... I think the perfect chip, isn't it? The idea is you have... The outside is really crunchy and golden and the inside is hot and fluffy. I don't know what... Cold chips, you have to be pretty desperate in my book to actually really go for cold chips.
I think so. Chips and mayonnaise, though. Ooh, that's another conversation. Dick's been in touch to say in 2009, Al Gore, former Vice President of America, and John Kerry, Secretary of State in the US, both said there'd be no ice cap in summer with climate change within 5 years. But the reverse is true. The hole in the ice cap, says Dick, is now smaller. Obviously, the climate change experts don't always know what they're talking about if they got this wrong, but we've given the best part of £50 million towards climate change initiatives when it obviously is not as bad as they say when the world's biggest campaigners get it wrong. Terry should look at the planning application, says Texter ending 879. It goes into great detail on flood issues and how they will be mitigated. Surely there's something more important to discuss than ships. Well, this is your programme. If there's something on your mind, we absolutely want to hear from you. 166177 studio at maxradio.com. You can also, with a couple of minutes left, 66 13 68, give us a call. Other texts, though?
I mean, to be absolutely fair, it goes all ways, doesn't it? Yeah, it goes chips and it goes climate change. It's up to you. In fact, there's someone coming in now. I'll get them now.
Okay. There is a message about all the trees. It's true about all the trees. I've watched them do it, but no one to report them as they are the ones in charge. Well, meant to be. It's being done in the UK as well. Not quite sure what you're talking about with regard to the trees there. Why don't the MHKs have to pay road tax? I would have thought they did have to pay road tax, but I stand to be corrected on that one. But I'm sure, John, that they do. Data and records from the agencies that collect this data show no trends in floods, tornadoes, droughts, storms and sea level rises. That is from Texter ending 246. So a lot of debate on the climate change issue here. Listening to Howard, who called in earlier, speaking about giving a gas meter reading on March the 1st. I also did the same, plus I queried it via messaging them online. I've heard nothing back, no reply to my query and no gas bill. Unfortunately, I live in Ramsey, so it's not as easy for us up here to visit their offices, but apparently it is sunny and warm in Ramsey at the moment.
Very nice too. The gentleman who was just on, actually the caller was in fact on, would you believe, the subject of chips. And he just wanted to say that he could remember the day when you got a really good bag of chips for one shilling. And he mentions something I've forgotten all about, the fact you used to be able to get, instead of chips, you could get scallops as well.
Ooh. Dave's been in touch to say the Ramsey development, get them built and bring more money and life to the town and more business for the local pubs, restaurants and shops. Instead, says Dave, people will moan and object. I don't know why people even bother trying to invest here or making the place better with constant negativity and objection. The plans are all available to view and completely take into account any flood risk. It is a great development, says Dave. Get it built. Mr. Thomas saying we'll have to pay even more vehicle tax. On the website it says a minimum of 65, but motorcycles at £28. We still need to clarify that, but let's go quickly to the lines now and join Steve. Good afternoon, Steve.
Afternoon, are you okay?
I'm good, how are you?
Oh, not so bad. Just give a quick whinge to you and then we'll feel better for the rest of the day then.
Okay.
It's like the government is saying, this bugs me. Oh, you know, times are hard. You know, we understand what it's like. People are struggling out there. And then obviously, you know, they say that spiel, which is good. And then they put, you know, we've got the electric going up. We've got the gas going up. Road tax going up. People don't, they just can't afford it. You've got your average family there that are working two jobs just to pay and make ends meet, yeah? You've got the average family that just covers what they're paying. And everything's going up, and the average family can't afford this. You know, road tax especially is, like we were discussing the other day, it's an absolute joke. They've got the, you know, to put people's road taxes up when some of these people are paying £600 a year for their vehicles to drive on these roads, yeah?
Mm.
And then they turn around and say, we want more money off you. They're not entitled to more money off you. They're having enough money off the public of the Isle of Man. If they can't budget it properly and repair their roads, that's down to the government, not us. And that's how strongly I feel on it. It's unbelievable. Everything's going up. You just keep holding the hands out and saying, oh, yeah, we know times are hard, times are hard. Well, show us then. Show us that you understand times are hard. Stop trying to put everything up that people can't afford to live.
It's interesting, you know, Steve. We do see, obviously, I mean, the costs are rising for everyone. So if you think about roads and all the materials needed to repair them, I mean, there's no getting away from the fact that that is more expensive and that money has to come from somewhere.
Correct. All you've got to do is work out how many vehicles are licensed or, you know, on the Isle of Man at the moment, right? And you add up that money. Where's that money going? Because it's not going on the roads. And we've had this conversation for years and years and years. And when we're gone and under the ground, there'll be other people having the conversation again. They're not going on the roads. It's not going on the roads. They're getting that much money, this government, off people, taxing this, taxing that. There's a lot of money coming in, and they can waste £70 million on a steam packet, you know, on that ferry thing across. They can waste £70 million on that when they want to. Where's all that money for the roads? You know, they've got the money when they want to use it for something. You know, but the, you know, they're persisting, putting up, and people can't afford to put up. You know, they just can't. That's why you have people driving around without road tax shortly.
All right, you Steve. Know? I hope you do feel better after that. Go and enjoy your afternoon.
Lovely.
All right, take care. Lovely to talk to you.
Bye.
I think that's a conversation for another day as well, hopefully. So lovely to have your company today. Thank you so much for your calls, texts and emails. Thank you very much indeed to Howard Kane, who's been taking the phone calls and reading through all the messages as well. If you think of something that you'd like to let us know about while we're not on air, 682-631. That's our out-of-hours answer phone number. You can leave a message, we can play it out, or you can just ask a question and hopefully we will get the answer to you. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Christy D is up next with 1 to 3. Whatever you're doing for the rest of the afternoon, have a good one. And if you need a whinge, we'll be back here tomorrow.